What do you guys want to talk about?
Movies? Do you guys watch movies? Are you fans of movies?
It's movies every week, dude.
I was hoping we could talk about sandwiches this week.
Yeah, or maybe like Hot Wheels cars. Could we collect those instead?
Sandwiches and Hot Wheels cars should be the new topic of the podcast. You did 9 episodes on Criterion. It's time for something else to
that's
have
right.
a spotlight.
This is double digits, man. Episode 10. Good point. I didn't even think about that. Well, I guess I did because I made the...
I typed it out.
I didn't really think of the significance because 10 is, you know, it's just 10.
I think you should switch to Roman numerals like the Super Bowl. I think this should be episode X.
Yeah, but, you know, they weaseled out of it when they got to L because, you know, I think they used like 50 for L. Is that right?
Well, you know, L is not a manly letter. That's the problem.
We're not that self-conscious. We don't care, right?
Got to be like an explosion behind the L.
Right, right. Criterion now, loser. All right, well, I guess this is the show. So we have two people. Duh. You just heard them. All right, so I'll go in alphabetical order. We have Dave Eves again.
Hi, I'm back.
Who is the most podcastiest person on my network, I guess. Mine and Mark's. And
by my own... false claim.
Your own math.
Yes.
Terrible math.
My Dave math.
But Matt is pretty close. Matt is up there. I haven't sat down and counted this. So Matt Gasteyer, who was a last minute addition. Thanks for being on call, Matt.
Yeah, I'm everybody's last minute addition. So
Matt, the afterthought Gasteyer.
Third resort.
I heard you were having Dave on. And I needed to get on here to keep ahead of him in the Criterion Now episode count. So
I am. Have a duel to the death during this podcast because I didn't bring any weaponry. I have my Zatoichi box set that could do some damage though.
That could actually, depending on which one you have. If it's the
dual
format,
it's dual format.
Oh, that can cut a head off.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, it was going to be just me and Dave because sometimes I think I like duo casts. It's just a little easier. And in fact, we weren't even going to do a show this week, but I figured, okay, well, I'll just talk to Dave for an hour. I can do that. And then I was like, I saw you guys sparring on Twitter, and I thought, Matt, you available? And so, Matt, you're available.
Thanks. Here I am.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we're switching things up a little bit. What we've been doing in the past is having what we've been doing, the just really what we've been doing or plugs or whatever at the end of the show. But that seems to be something that fits better at the beginning of the show as we're kind of getting warmed up and saying hello to each other. So, so Dave, what have you been doing lately?
Oh, geez. Well, I have a couple podcasts in the can that haven't been released yet. One from this guy, Doug. I don't know if you've ever heard of him before.
It's never going to get released.
Never going to get released. The Plain Archive thing. I don't know.
Get the trial, Doug.
Release it. A couple coming up and outside of podcast stuff, this year is the year I decided I'm going to try to keep up with Criterions as they come out in my goal to eventually reach completion. So that's been fun for my wallet.
How's that working out?
So far, so good. It's kind of a, like, when can I wait on this? When is there going to be a coupon for this to try to stay ahead of the curve? But got multiple Maniacs coming in the mail now. Wasn't expecting that to happen.
And I have two Maniacs right here.
How about that? Multiple Maniacs.
And there'll be a few things in the movie you aren't expecting to happen as well. So.
I'm expecting a lobster to show up, so that much.
I'm actually holding off on that one because Mark has claimed it. So he's going to be on the show in a couple weeks, so we're going to save that for him.
Okay.
Well, welcome back, Dave.
Thank you.
Or as you call yourself, Podcast Ronin. And Matt, you're kind of also a podcast Ronin. So what have you been up to?
Yeah, I've only lent my services to you guys, but who knows in the future, you never know.
We might hire you out, you know.
Yeah, I'm not particularly loyal, so.
There's a chieftain that's taking advantage of people. We need that.
Yeah. I run the Criterion Considered Facebook group, I run it less than I sort of oversee it at this point. but if you want to come on there and talk Criterion, please do so. And Other than that, I just watch a whole lot of movies and raise a couple of kids. I am on Letterboxd, and I don't like the world right now, so it's fun to watch movies.
It is. Boy, movies are great right now.
Much better than
they're amazing. Well, okay, I'm Aaron, if you didn't know, and I've been watching a ton of movies, too. In fact, I got sick again. I don't know what's the deal with me getting colds this season. So I got another cold during the week, and so I watched a ton of movies. So I was able to catch up on our movies for the show, and I also watched some new movies. I watched, we finally saw Get Out in the theaters, which was, that's a lot of fun in theaters. I didn't love it as much as everybody else, but see it in the theaters, and see it. We'll just say that people talk to it, and that's a very good thing. What else did I see? We saw, American Honey is really good, and saw Fences, which actually it was kind of disappointing. I mean, it was good, but you know, I guess I was expecting this. We'll just say that, you know, Scandal notwithstanding, I'm fine with who won the Oscar for best actor. All right, well, I have a little surprise for you guys.
Oh, geez.
Springing it on you. Are you nervous?
I'm terrified, yeah.
You should be. I wanted you to be nervous. So you guys were sparring it out on Twitter about being Ronin and having a duel. So you're going to actually have a duel.
Oh, geez.
So I'm calling.
I've got my box set.
All right. So you both know Speed Round. Actually, Dave, you invented Speed Round, kind
of. Sort of. I provided the music, at least.
That's half the battle. So this is going to be kind of like that. 5 seconds. But this is Samurai Round.
Oh, geez.
So cue Samurai music. Fight music. And I'm going to, I don't know how I'm going to keep track of this, but I'm going to actually keep score here, or try to. I really didn't think this through very well. I don't have anything to write on. So I'm going to try to keep, I might have to announce the winner after I edit.
Okay.
But, all right, 5 seconds each. I'm just going to run down a film, and if you go over 5 seconds, you lose. So, Dave, 47 Ronin.
Haven't seen it.
Matt, 47 Ronin.
I also have not seen it.
Damn. All right, Matt, 3 Outlaw Samurai.
It's okay. It should not be in the collection.
Dave, 3 Outlaw Samurai.
I think it's really fun, and I disagree.
Dave wins.
Dave, I'm going to be more positive in the next one.
Dave, Samurai Spy.
I haven't seen that one, but it sounds fun.
Matt, Samurai Spy.
It's super confusing, but I did enjoy it.
Matt wins. All right, Matt, Kill the movie. Not,
Kill is
don't
really
actually
fun.
Kill.
Similar to Yojimbo, but funnier.
Dave, Kill.
It has a great font on the cover, and it's in my Filmstruck watch list.
All right, Dave, you won that. That was original. Dave, Ryan.
Come back to the collection.
Okay, Matt, Ran.
It's great. I love the colors. It's a fun movie.
You're both wrong. Epic battle scenes is the correct answer. With flag colors. So, all right, Matt, The Last Samurai.
It's a movie.
Dave, The Last Samurai.
Tom Cruise.
All right, Matt wins that point. Wins that point.
Because it is a movie, I was right.
It is correct. It is a movie. It came out.
It has Tom Cruise.
Well, he got the fact first. So, Dave, it's your turn. All right, Lady Snowblood.
Oh, I love that. The first one, not the second one.
Matt.
I got to agree with Dave here. All right. On both counts.
All right, you kind of get the advantage of going first. So, Dave gets that point. Matt, Sanjuro.
Good. Not as good as Yojimbo.
Dave.
It's fun, but I agree. It's not as good as Yojimbo.
All right, Ty. You go. Dave, Rashomon.
Well, in my opinion, I think it's really good. I don't know what Matt will say.
Okay.
Matt? I haven't seen it in over a decade. I need to rewatch it, but at the time, it was my favorite Kurosawa.
That's right. Not what I heard.
Dave's was funny, and well, although Dave, you almost ruined it by coming back, so you're on notice, but you won that. All right, Matt, The Twilight Samurai.
I've never even heard of that.
All right, Matt, Dave?
I've heard, is that a recent movie?
Like 2003. All right, you both lose. Okay. I'm deducting 5 points from both of you. You're both in the negatives now. All right, Matt, or I'm sorry, Dave, Yojimbo.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Matt.
One of the few truly perfect movies ever made.
All right, Matt wins the point. And I'm deducting 5 points for myself for using your four-letter names. Dave, Zatoichi.
I've seen them all except for the other ones, and I was on your criterion now, close-up.
Dave, or Matt, see?
I want to hear more about how he's seen them all except for the other ones.
Dave wins that point because he was on the episode. That was kind of unfair. Matt, Sanshiro Sugata.
I didn't really love it, but it's fun to see Kurosawa early.
Dave.
I have not seen it.
All right, Matt wins that point. Dave, Kakemusha.
That is my probably second favorite Kurosawa.
Matt.
I love it, but there's a lot of horses falling down.
Okay, all right. That's a good observation. That's the kind of insight we look for here. So Matt wins the point.
Yeah, he gets that one.
All right, Matt, Harakuri.
I love that movie. That'd probably be in my top 10 criterions.
Dave.
It's a great movie. I don't know if it's top 10 for me, but it's great.
Matt went bold. He won that point. Dave, Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai.
That I've been wanting to see for years.
All right. That doesn't... Matt.
I have a great movie, Jarmusch, better than Michael Mann.
You know, you could have dunked, but you lay up, but you still win the point. All right, Matt, Lone Wolf and Cub.
I've said on now before, not a big fan.
Dave.
Schlock, but I like schlock.
Okay, all right, Dave, you win that point. All right, Dave, The Hidden Fortress. Is this going on too long?
There's definitely no way you're keeping score.
Dave, The Hidden Fortress.
I watched it because Star Wars was based on it, and it's good and not like Star Wars.
All right, Matt.
Mifune is such a badass in that movie.
All right, well, the Star Wars connection wins, so Dave wins that point. Matt, Throne of Blood.
Excellent Shakespeare adaptation. The lead lady is amazing in it.
Dave.
Only black and white movie I wish that was in color.
All right, I'm going to go with Matt here. It's black and white. You just got to deal.
I know.
Matt, Samurai Rebellion.
Ted Turner in 1992.
No, I don't want that. I don't want that colorization.
You guys didn't hear me, so you both lost 5 points for Samurai Rebellion.
Are we still in the negatives here?
Yes, I think so. all right, Dave, Sword of Doom.
Ooh, I like that. I like the non-ending.
Okay. Spoiler. All right, Matt.
Bleak.
All right, Matt wins the point. Matt, Samurai Trilogy.
I'm not a huge fan. It's kind of like Gone with the Wind. It's too long and a little milquetoast.
Dave?
I was a little disappointed as well, but I don't think they're bad movies. I just expect a little more.
All right, you're both wrong because they are good movies and great use of color, but Dave liked it a little more, so Dave gets that point. All right.
No, I agree with Dave. I mean, they are good movies. I just expected more.
Softball, Seven Samurai. Both of you. Come on.
Yay.
There's nothing else to say about it. Seven Samurai.
It speaks for itself. It's
all right. Perfect. And then, perfect. On that same note, The Magnificent Seven. I'm counting that as a samurai film.
The 50s one or the recent one?
All right. Matt, you lost that point for even bringing up the new one. All right. I don't know who the winner is. Like you said.
It was me.
No,
I kept score. Clearly no, me. I kept score.
No, you didn't.
But my points counted for more.
You're lying. All right, I want somebody else to say who won, because I'm biased. All right, so was that fun?
It was great. Dave, I expect your head in the mail any day now.
It will be mailed to you with a bomb implanted in it for my revenge.
All right, well, that was fun to put together. You both did pretty well. Even though you both finished in the negative, I'm sure. All right, well, now we have to get back to real stuff. Enough of these shenanigans. So, all right, I'm going to give you guys a chance to chime in on the June announcements. Those came out last week, a week before. Do you guys remember those?
Can you remind me about everything that came out?
No. Can you just stop and listen to the last episode, please?
Gotcha. All right, just bear with me for an hour and a half. I'll be right back.
I think it was an hour and a half. Good job.
Well, it was we have the re-release of Ugetsu.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those nitpicky people that's just like, oh, you couldn't have done a new cover, but I got over it really, really quickly, unlike some people.
Okay.
The Lodger I'm really excited for. I've been waiting for some early Hitchcock for quite a while. I think it has a great cover. And I'm both happy they're doing a new score and a little disappointed because this was on like the Criterion transfer, whatever you'd call it, was on iTunes and Amazon for a while, and I had rented it so I could see it. And the score that it's included with is fine, and everything's normal until about half an hour in when it suddenly turns into a pop song with, like, lyrics. It's still kind of done in that, like...
Like Rihanna?
Almost.
Katy Perry?
but it still, like, has the kind of sounds of, like, that you'd expect from a 20s silent film with the score made today. What? And it's the most jarring and off-putting thing ever, but it almost works. So I'm sad that it's not there so other people can't share in my pain, but also I'm glad it's not there so that when I watch the movie, I don't have to deal with the pop song in the middle.
You know, I think Adele should score silent films.
Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, it's part of the debate, like, should silent films have a certain kind of music? What's wrong with pop music being under silent films? But this is just so out of place based on the music and the rest of the movie.
I will
defend the Marauder Metropolis.
I'm with you. In fact, I think experimental music with silent films is cool. I saw like this post-rock band doing a Cabinet of Caligari, ooh, and that was a lot of fun. So
I think as long as it's like consistent throughout, it's fine. But if you have like classical music and then like a punk song in the middle, that's a little weird.
Yeah, if the post-rock band erupted into Umbrella, I would have had a problem with it. All right, there was also Straw Dogs' Marseille Trilogy and They Live by Night. Matt, do you have any thoughts on any of the five?
The only one I haven't seen is the Marseille Trilogy. I'm really looking forward to it. It sounds amazing. I'm not a big Straw Dogs fan, by which I mean I strongly dislike that movie. They Live by Night is great, though. And The Lodger is really strong. It may be my favorite Hitchcock silent.
You guys and also Scott and Arik have really raised the bar for The Lodger. I really wasn't too excited about it, but I am now. So
I think it's really good. It really surprised me that early on in his career, all of his elements are there. I would have expected something that's really like the work of maybe someone that's not quite as focused, but he's got all his pretty much all of his trademarks in there.
So are you guys excited for They Live by Night for Nick Rae?
I haven't seen that one.
Okay. Well, Matt, you have.
Yeah, I like that movie. It wouldn't be in the higher end of Ray films for me, but it's a solid movie, and the cover is really awesome, too.
Yeah.
It's definitely deserving of being in the collection, but it's kind of similar to Asphalt Jungle from December, where it's like, it's a great director, it's a pretty good movie. It's not great.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I'll take any Ray they put in the collection, but I think actually the ones they have in the collection, which is Bigger Than Life, what's the other one?
In a Lonely Place.
In a Lonely Place. And, of course, Rebel Without a Cause, which is not, but it probably never will be. Well, I shouldn't say that. Maybe it could.
And Olive scooped up Johnny Guitar.
Olive did, although I'm not the biggest Johnny Guitar fan.
So. Oh, I love that one.
Yeah. I like that movie, too. Yeah, I actually own that edition. It's a nice edition, so
it
I'm
really
not too mad that that Criterion didn't get it.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. And in fairness, that's one of those, kind of like the Mildred Pierce conversation we had a couple weeks ago, that I didn't like, but if I watch a new transfer 10 years later, I could get it. I think that's one that probably benefits from revisitations.
I liked it all so much more the second time I watched it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are going to get into some of the recent releases, and I kind of done some catch up. We hadn't. I like to cover these as they come out, if possible. So I'm already behind on 45 Years and Multiple Maniacs. Of course, we had a box set. I have no idea what we're going to do in May with the World Cinema Project. In fact, I'm probably not going to buy it in May just because of money. So anyway, we're going to talk about Being There, and we're going to finish the Before trilogy with Before Midnight. So Being There. I'll just go alphabetical order. Dave, did you get a chance to see this release? It just came out this week.
This is actually my first time ever watching it. It's something that I've been wanting to watch for years, years and years and years and years. I'm glad I finally got around to it because I really, really liked it. I would quote things now, but my brain isn't working because it's early and I stayed up too late watching movies.
Yes. I understand.
There will be growth in the spring.
You must plant roots in the winter.
No. So you're saying a big box set is coming, Dave?
Ooh, that's... They should just do cryptic clues from Peter Sellers from now on to
in
make
the
us think
summer.
There will be growth.
The box set will bloom in the summer. So you liked it then?
I liked it quite a bit. I thought it was quite a good movie. And even though, and I'm not going to spoil anything, even though I knew the ending, it still kind of took me by surprise because seeing it in context gave me a completely different kind of understanding of what I think it means based on prior knowledge of just seeing the shot on its own.
It's probably one, it's probably a spoiler that's out there. A lot of people have been spoiled about it, but it's one of those where if you rewatch the film with that in mind, you could go a little too far, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a remarkable ending. I think it's a remarkable movie. I haven't seen it in, or I hadn't seen it. No, actually, I'm sorry. I had seen it about 5 years ago. But I think it reflects modern times a little bit, would you say?
A little too well.
Yeah.
I would prefer Chance the Gardener than anything that's current that could be associated with that sort of ideal.
And, of course, we're talking about Dancing with the Stars.
We
don't talk politics or anything else on the show. So, Matt, I'm sure you've seen this.
Yeah, I saw it about 20 years ago, and... wasn't crazy about it, but I did rewatch it this week. I'm not as enthusiastic about it, I think, as you guys are. I think it's a very good movie. Peter Sellers is phenomenal in it, and he's just perfect in the role, and the ending is great. My problem with it is that I think it's a little long for the joke of the movie, which is basically that kind of idea of there's two people in a room who, if they, you know, figured out the one thing that is the secret, then the whole thing would fall apart. And so every line of dialogue has to be just right, or they would figure, you know, they would figure it out.
See, and you're saying it's implausible, this movie?
Well, you know, I think, yeah, obviously, I mean, it is, but I think there are movies that I think work better in that context than this does, because it's so over the top that it's just you see them straining to avoid the secret being revealed through the entire movie, as opposed to it sort of really working for me. But I do think it's a very good movie. I liked it more this second time, I don't feel like it's as, like, for example, I think Broadcast News is a stronger sort of satire that speaks to the political and media structure in America than Being There or even Network, really.
Yeah, I think this is more comedic satire. In fact, I think obviously it's a comedy. Peter Sellers is hilarious to me. I think it's subtle comedy, though. I think people could miss it a little bit. Some of the humor, in fact, little things you notice on second and third watches, I've noticed. But I don't think it's. I think like Broadcast News and Network, they're kind of there's a little more realism there. It's not pure satire. It's more. I mean, it is, but it's more satire by impersonation,
by proxy.
There's a little more gritty realism in Network because you see the horror of where the news, or actually A Face in the Crowd, you could make the same argument. Whereas I don't think anybody ever really buys that Being There could be real. It's always a joke. It really is a comedy.
I think that it transcends the joke a little bit though, in that like magical realism sense. You kind of, as long as you're on the same page with it, and I totally get what you're saying, Matt, with like, it's completely dependent on the dialogue going exactly this way. And I can see that being a fault. I totally get that. But for me, like, it already has me by that point, so I don't even care. It's like, keep it going. It could be 3 hours long. I'd still enjoy it.
And some people are wise to it, but the thing is, they don't really get the chance to speak up. So, of course, in today's society, you know, Facebook and internet, it would be even less plausible. And I think actually, if you look at the times when it came out, you know, it's on the heels of a war, and you know, we're not too far removed from a war. It's in a politically unstable time. This was, you know, post-Vietnam, during the Iran hostage crisis. Or I think it was probably, actually, it might have been right about the time of the Iran hostage crisis. And Hal Ashby was no question, he was a very political director. If you look at his 70s work, actually, I think his 70s work is stellar. I think it kind of went downhill after that, but I think this is still in the vein. It maybe actually be too obvious compared to his other work. So, like, Last Detail is a little, I think it's a better film, but it's a little more subtle as well. So, all right, any final thoughts on Being There? Or did you guys watch any of the supplements?
I watched, what did I watch? The alternate ending, which was, compared to what we actually get, it's like, yeah. Why did you film this?
Why did you film that?
Stupid.
It's dumb.
Doom.
Well, we haven't even gotten into the awful blooper. Oh,
they included that as an extra, too, the blooper reel that goes into the credits. I don't know why.
Yeah.
And there's a version out there, apparently, that's just Stevie Static under the credits. Why didn't they put that on the disc?
I would have been fine with bloopers as a feature, even that blooper, even though it hasn't really aged very well.
No.
But,
no.
But I just seeing Peter Sellers in his element, I think, is fun. There was a documentary which I thought was okay. It was basically just a few Talking Heads interviews. I like the fact that it was produced by Criterion Now. Criterion Now. Criterion Today, which is basically Who's Living. And I don't think you can really piece together the really essence of the film, of a film that's about, what, 45? Wow, is it that old? No, 30. 35 years old.
38 years old.
Yeah, so based on the memories of four people, but I thought it did an okay job. I don't know if you guys saw that or not. No, the one thing I did enjoy seeing Peter Sellers on talk shows, even if it's Gene Shalit. You know, I'm not the biggest fan, but being able to see Sellers doing shtick, doing voices, which is probably what probably annoyed him, actually, but everybody wanted that, so that was enjoyable. No? Didn't see it?
I did not watch it yet. No.
You lose. It only came out Tuesday. What
am I even more in the negative now with my
points?
Well,
that game is over, but...
The whole thing isn't scored.
Yeah, that's a good point. I might score the episode.
You should score the whole episode and let Twitter decide who the winner of Criterion Now is.
Yeah, the thing is, I really don't listen to the episode as I do it. I don't even really listen to it as I edit, and I forget things. I was like, oh, yeah, Dave said that, but...
I'll cut that out.
Yeah. Oh, man, what was Dave thinking? That happens all the time. Actually, that's more, what was I thinking? All right, well, we'll move on. So this is the first time we're actually completing a box set with this little experiment here. And I don't know if we'll keep doing this. I don't think there's any way we can finish this with the WCP box set. But with the Before Trilogy, it kind of worked out. We talked about Sunset with my wife and crap, who else was on with my wife?
Martin,
of course, yeah. And then we talked to Sunrise with some other people. Boy, these kind of blur together. I can't remember my own show.
Jason. Apologies. And Doug.
Thank you. Apologies to, who was it again? Doug?
Jameson
and Doug, that's right.
I blame Doug for you messing that up.
I totally his fault.
He really should.
He really should have gotten the trial.
How dare he?
He is the worst. So I will probably forget you guys too. No, my apologies. So anyway, we're finishing up the trilogy, and I finally rewatched Before Midnight. I don't know if you guys had a chance to just nod your head, yes or no. Okay. Matt, I can't see you. Are you nodding?
I am nodding, yes. You
okay.
Can't see me.
So we'll talk about Before Midnight.
There I am.
Then I'd like to, there you go. Then I'd like to get your thoughts on the trilogy as a whole and the Criterion, the job they did in packaging it. So... All right, well, we'll go out of alphabetical order this time. Matt, what did you think of Before Midnight? Was this your first time seeing it, or was this a revisitation?
This was a revisit. I saw Sunrise and Sunset in theaters when they were released, and then watched Midnight on Blu-ray quite soon after it was released in theaters. And I... absolutely love this movie. I love the series. I think that it's spectacular. If I was going to rank them to a certain degree, I would say Sunset is the masterpiece, and but I think Before Midnight is the second best, and I think it's incredibly emotional and realistic and raw. And I find the ending to be very moving and relatable as a married person. And I think it's a really nice closer to the series. I hope they don't make a fourth one. They've said that it's possible that they will.
I think they won't.
But I think it's a really great movie. I love the conversation at the beginning between Ethan Hawke and the Greek guy about his novel that he's thinking about writing, and their argument about whether the movie is about, or whether the novel is about perception or time. And I think
a little meta, super meta,
but I do think that that does really get to the core of Linklater's films in general, and of this movie, this trilogy in particular, which is sort of his core work. And I think the film is just a reflection of that, and kind of the shifting of perceptions and of time and of relationships that you have with people. And I find it to be a really moving film, and I think it stands on its own, even without, you know, how great the first two movies are.
I'm glad you pointed out that scene about them talking about the book, because I thought that when he was talking about the book he was planning to write, the really, really pretentious one, and it got shot down as pretentious, like, that could basically be Waking Life or A Scanner Darkly, and I think that's almost Linklater commenting on his own work, not just the trilogy, but just him. That might be what you just said.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think the same of the book that he discusses in Sunset as well, about the book over the course of a pop song. I mean, you know, so people definitely criticize a lot of his films like Dazed and Confused and Everybody Wants Some for being sort of nostalgic pop memories. So I think, yeah, there's definitely some of that meta stuff, but I think it really works in the context of who that character is and of how the films evolve.
He should do a song in a pop song that's in the middle of the score to The Lodger, I think.
Yeah, he should. Everyone's reaction to what's this going on right now in this movie. This is a silent film.
Yeah. So, Dave, did you catch Midnight? And actually, you're about to embark on this journey. You're about to get married. So
you probably have a different perspective than
Matt and I.
Well, Jess and I have been together for almost 9 years, which is about how long it takes to make a Before movie.
Yeah, so you're on Before Sunset now.
How about that? I did watch Before Midnight, and this is actually my first time watching all of these movies when the box set came out.
Oh, cool.
And it was quite a ride. I really liked them. I will say that I do think that Before Midnight is the weakest link, in my opinion. I still think it's a really, really good movie. I definitely, especially watching these like basically back to back, you can see both the characters mature. You can see the actors and the ideas and the story, and especially Linklater's directorial style kind of mature. This is like the most measured one, in a sense. And because of that, it almost feels a little safe. Almost, I feel like Before Sunset is like the big gamble. Which is what I think makes that like really good, because that's literally nothing but a conversation. Before Sunrise has a few more elements thrown in there. Mm-hmm. Before Midnight has more characters thrown in there. You have a big conversation at a dinner table, which is not something that happens in the other movies, and that must have been a nightmare to shoot because it's highly improvisational, and that's a lot of people being thrown in there, and it still works. No part of this movie feels unnatural at any point, which is great. But the biggest thing for me is, after spending two movies with these two characters, it's like, stop fighting. Come on, guys. I just watched you 18 years ago. Look at how in love you were. Just do that again. I want to see more of that. And that's not how life works. I get that. But I don't know. There was a lot of time in a hotel room spent fighting that I just...
Yeah, Dave and Jess, stop fighting.
Exactly.
It is definitely hard, for sure, to watch these characters be bitter towards each other.
It's really hard, and the worst thing is that as I'm watching it, like, even though they're fighting and it's a bad fight, you can see just how much the Ethan Hawke character loves her through it all, which makes it even worse. And another part of me, this is just me complaining, being picky, I wish that we saw more of Greece than just a hotel room. Mm-hmm. The other movies, they're walking around, seeing the sights.
Not as much of a sense of place.
That's true.
And this is, so much of it spent in a hotel room, which I think makes total sense for this argument, because it's a closed-off space for them to kind of hash out their feelings. You can't really have that out in the streets. But it almost feels, makes this almost seem like an episode rather than a movie. Kind of an in-between thing. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they could have just kind of like grumbled at each other while walking in Greece, and then screamed in the hotel room. Not that they really, but I guess.
But I think it makes sense, because they even talk, like, there's moments where, like, it's been a long time since we just bullshitted with each other. And that's basically what these movies are, two people that have a deep connection bullshitting with one another. And it's hard to kind of create that excuse for two people that have spent so much time together, because, I mean, between the first and the second one, they hadn't seen each other. Mm-hmm. And between the second and the third, they've spent every day together, so...
Yeah, it is quite a project, really an experiment, if you think about it. In fact, probably somewhere between the planning of the second one is when he came up with Midnight, or Boyhood, I guess.
Yeah, he made a whole movie in between these, and then some.
Yeah, but I really think that having rewatched these, because like you, Matt, I'd watch them when they came out, and then I've told my story about Before Sunset. That's one that, you know, we kind of made our own personal movie and went to Paris and all that. But I'd say that now rewatching them, I think that they did build these with these same characters. So even though things are a little more real in Midnight, it's not quite the fantasy land. You can see how they got there. Like there's a little bit of a freak out in Before Sunset near the end, which I paid a little more closer attention to now, knowing how Celine would evolve. So I'm still going to say that Midnight is my least favorite of it. However, I think from a filmmaking perspective, I think it's more accomplished. I think it looks better, and that might just be because Linklater's had 20-something years or more under his belt making films, and he just knows what he's doing more. And he had a good... Actually, Athena at Rahel, I think is how you pronounce it. I heard that on the commentary. Sungiri, the lady that directed Chevalier and a few other Greek films, she was involved in the production as well, so... I think he had some talent to bounce ideas off of. I'm not going to spoil it, and how obviously there's a fight that comes up, but I'm not going to talk about the aftermath of the fight. But I will say that even though the first two movies there's a little bit of fantasy, I think that there's more realism with Midnight. I think that they did. And it's tough. I'm tap dancing here because I don't want to give things away to people that haven't listened to it. But I didn't really. Think they earned the ending. I don't know. So I still liked it, and I liked it more than I first saw it, but I appreciated more of the early scenes. Like the airport scene with his kid, I thought that said a lot about his character, and then how Celine bonded with her son-in-law, really. Thought that was special, even on the phone. So I don't know. Reactions?
Have you seen Journey to Italy?
Oh, of course, yeah, and they reference that.
Yeah, I think that both of those movies, I guess if you've seen, now I've given away one of those, because they kind of end similarly, if you've only seen one of them. But I think both of those movies, the kind of, the ending can easily feel unearned to people who have, and I think some people, you know, people fight differently, but I think that there is a situation... For a lot of people, when you're married, you say things you don't mean, or you're upset and you're trying to hurt the other person like you feel like they've hurt you. And then you just sort of stop and think, wait a second, what are we doing here? What is the point of all of this? And I think it's easy to go either way in those situations and say, oh, that's not really happening. Or really feeling like that there's truth in the psychology behind that. And that's kind of how I felt in that situation.
Yeah, and there's also the way it resolves, and again, tap dancing here, but I think there's a little melancholy also, and maybe these people aren't for each other. Maybe these two coincidences should have just ended. Maybe the third movie shouldn't have been made, and Jesse should have stayed with his wife, and we probably could keep going for a while, but...
Yeah, well, and I think they do that on purpose, because the first two movies ended ambiguously, so I think they're intentionally doing that with the third as well.
Well, his whole thing was your perception of how the first one ends is dependent on if you're a romantic or not.
That's
right.
He
keeps that going in all of them.
Right.
And, I like that.
I think Before Sunset, a little more ambiguous, but I think it was pretty clear.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's like at that one. I don't think it matters how cynical you are, how romantic you are. You know what you want, and I think everyone wants the same ending.
I'll tell you what, it made me happy with my marriage.
Yeah. Well, when I saw Before Sunset in theaters, when that end happened, the entire audience groaned because they were so invested. You know, I saw it in a packed theater, and they were so invested in the characters and what was going to happen. That the fact that it ended the way that it ended was, there was just this, you know, painful, like groan, because not out of negativity, but out of the fact that they were, you know, you were building to this thing and then you really, you know, you weren't going to find out for.
So they wanted more. There was some longing.
Yes, exactly. For sure.
Yeah. I still want more. I'm in the camp. It's just like, oh, keep going. Make one every 9 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you guys seen Seven Up, any of the documentary series?
Yes. I've seen one of them.
Okay. Well, there's a lot. There's like seven of them now.
Yeah.
So they could do like that. Just the fictionalization. I think the actors would probably get sick of it. That would become their life's work, really. Yeah.
I almost feel like there needs, if they're going to do another one, it needs to be more than 9 years later. It needs to be them like elderly or something.
Let's wait till they're 80. How about that, Dave?
Exactly. That'll be perfect.
Before, what's a good nursing home? Before noon, when I need to take my pills.
Yeah. Before dinner at 4 p.m.
This is my pitch for them as old people. Call it after 4 or something.
Yeah.
And it's them in a nursing home. Jesse has dementia. And it's them. Basically, it's like before sunrise again, where they're meeting for the first time because one of them doesn't remember. Mm-hmm. But that's probably super hokey.
Yeah, or maybe before 5:30.
Before 5:30,
when Wapner's on. Wapner probably won't be a thing. Actually, Wapner just passed away recently. So
the bingo scene is going to be amazing.
Yeah,
the bingo. Yeah,
the 45-minute bingo scene.
Jesse, I picked 4F. Damn it. anyway, well, I was pretty pleased with the trilogy. I think that there weren't a lot of features. I don't know if you guys got to many of the features. There were just a couple of them on each disc. The third one did have a commentary, but I think that was ported from the Sony Blu-ray. So did you guys get much of a feel for the box set? Are you pleased with it? I'll start with you, Dave.
I haven't dug into any of the special features yet. I kind of just let the movies wash over me.
Okay.
I will dig in. I think it's a beautiful box set. I like the texture of it. I like the art. It's something that's nice on the shelf.
Okay. Matt, did you really dig in much, or...?
Not yet. My wife and I watched the films together over the course of three nights, and we're gonna try to carve out time to watch the extras together as well. But I mean, it seems really interesting, and I did not care for the covers very much when they first came out. But holding them in your hand, the paper stock that they chose for them, the way they look in person, I think they're pretty great.
Yeah, it's hard for me to fathom binge watching this series because it's really been a part of my life. And as I said during Sunset, I can't really look at it subjectively or objectively. But I guess I did kind of binge watch it in a month or so. I guess that counts. But it's that's weird. Anyway,
compared to 18 years, that's a binge watch.
That's right. Yeah, that's my first experience and multiple watches in between actually. So. Next we have Blow Up is coming next week. I'm actually going out of town next week. I think I'm going to record an episode. It'll be a duo. I'm not inviting you two back. Sorry.
Oh.
Ever. you both. That was the test of the samurai. If you ended up positive, you'd get to come back. No.
We ended up way in the negative.
You did.
We did terribly.
You did. But no, you'll definitely be back. But Blow Up comes out next week, and then we have a little break, and then we have the Demi films, which will be nice because I can catch up. I'm trying to watch these for the show as they come out, which is challenging, but I'm managing okay. And I know you're trying to buy them, Dave, so this is
your wallet. I'm looking forward to that break because I already own the Jacques Demy box set.
Yeah,
so I got a couple weeks off.
May is going to kill you because
May, like, May is going to be murder.
There's like 30 releases or something.
There is.
I haven't counted.
I'm hoping to parlay some of those to the July Barnes & Noble sale, hoping, God willing, it happens.
Yeah, yeah. I think the WCP set is probably going to be everybody's Barnes & Noble. Yeah. That and the Marseille trilogy, probably.
Yep.
I bought the WCP set on Amazon. I couldn't wait for another Yang movie.
Oh, yeah, they had a pretty good price on that one.
Yeah, it was actually we saw a good argument in one of our groups. I think it was like 79, where it would otherwise be 50 or 60 if mm-hmm. on the website or on Barnes & Noble during the sale. And I think somebody said, "Well, you're going to not pay $10 to wait 2 months to experience these films." So I think I pre-ordered it too, and I think I might keep that, and that'll allow me to dip in a little bit in the months to come too.
My argument for waiting is that I still have the first box set to go through.
Same here. Although I'm getting close, we're actually going to do a close-up episode on that. So
oh, cool.
on a few uh-huh. of the films. So that's coming up. That's our next one.
Okay.
After Duvivier. All right. Well, let me go through a couple news pieces, and I'm going to be a little quick here because we are surprised we're running long. Here, I thought it was going to be a quick.
I blame Dave.
I blame Matt.
I blame me. So here's some news items. So, Le Samurai, and I don't know about this one. There was a post that John Mulvaney said that Le Samurai is coming out on Blu-ray, but it was a cryptic post, and I've seen these before, him basically saying, well, I think we're just out of stock. This was in response to it being showing up as, I think, either out of print or buy on Amazon on the website, and actually I have it here.
It's buy at Amazon.
And there are some copies right. of it apparently floating around with the updated box art with the wacky C as opposed to the old line, the Criterion Collection box.
And what he said was this version was only out for a bit and has not now gone out of print temporarily while we prepare for a newer edition. So, while we prepare for a newer edition. Now, didn't they say that about BRD and about Sternberg?
Yeah.
So... It's
Did they
while.
Say? I don't know if they said those specific words, though. To me, it seems pretty solid, especially because these are much higher profile than BRD.
I will also say that Le Samurai has had a an HD print on iTunes for a little over a year now, so that is a good.
That is true. So maybe they are preparing. Maybe that's something that's happening. I think it's also worth pointing out that John Mulvaney is not a real person. Spoiler alert.
wait, really?
Yeah, yeah. And he, really, everybody in the office, I'm guessing, I don't know this for a fact, but I have a feeling that's one of those, if you work in a Outlook environment, they're shared mailboxes. I have a feeling that probably everybody at Criterion has access to the Mulvaney box and that everybody can answer it. So it could have been somebody slipping up and revealing something. So, yeah, Matt.
You just blew my mind.
Yeah?
I always assumed he was a real mythical Criterion person that I wanted to be friends with.
Oh, I thought...
He's Santa Claus.
Me revealing corporate America to you.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, there have been some people who theorized that he was a real person who worked at Criterion in the 90s or something and then left and they just kept the... email address, but I think he's fake.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Because there was like a web archive of like the Criterion website from the 90s when they still just did Laserdiscs and the webmaster was John Mulvaney.
Are you serious, Dave? Do you really think he's been real this whole time?
I why would I doubt that they would say email John Mulvaney if you have issues?
Well, because you joke a lot. It's hard to tell.
No, I'm legitimately disturbed.
All right, well, let's... All right, Criterion?
There's also no Santa Claus, Dave.
What? Yeah,
they're never going to come clean on this. I think they like having that. And I could be wrong. Maybe there is a John Mulvaney that... it's kind of like...
There's a John Mulvaney listening to this episode right now saying, they don't know I'm real. Crying.
Speaking of Fences, he's like Viola Davis in Fences. What have you done? Anyway, you guys probably haven't seen it, have you?
I have not seen it yet.
I'm sure a lot of people haven't seen it, so reference missed. But anyway, yeah, I think John Mulvaney is fiction. Sorry to spoil everybody's illusion there.
I'm right there with everybody. My innocence has been destroyed.
If you lose a tooth, he might put a quarter under your pillow, though. I'm just saying. So anyway, that was a fun digression. So Mulvaney maybe says... actually, Mulvaney's going to come back into this conversation in a little bit, so... hold that thought. All right, let's get to the next news thing is The Other Side of Hope. Actually, this broke right before we started recording here. This is the latest from Aki Kaurismäki, Mr. Deadpan filmmaker, Finnish, right?
Is yes.
That, okay. So he has a film that's just coming out in this year. It wasn't really on my radar, even though I'm a fan of his. But I don't know if it's going to play Cannes, or I don't think Cannes lineup has been announced yet, so I don't think anybody knows that yet. But I don't know where it's going to play or what's going to happen.
I think it was at the Berlinale.
Oh, good. Thank you, Matt. I actually didn't even read the article because I literally saw it right before we started recording. I kind of skimmed it and saw the word Janus on there and said, okay, it's in. So anyway, the word Janus is going to distribute this in the States. Which I think is cool. They've been doing this a little more lately with The Lure, and I think there have been some other films, newish films that they... Well, actually, Camera Person. So I think this is great for them to get a little bit in the distribution game, and I'm all for another Kaurismäki in the collection. So, you guys?
I'm very excited. We will talk about him a little later real quick, but... he hasn't made a feature in a few years now, so this is kind of his return. It's gotten great reviews, so I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, was his last one Le Havre?
I think so.
That's in the collection, of course.
Yeah, and I think Janus may have distributed that as well. It was either Janus or IFC.
Okay. And, you know, I think they still have an arrangement, but I think that deal might have blurred a little bit. So you don't see as many IFC films coming to Criterion, although you know that they always have a shot at it. So actually, I have to check. I don't recall the last IFC film to show up in the collection.
Yeah, I always wonder if they felt like they got burned by that on things like... Tiny Furniture or particular movies that they chose to release because they had access to the IFC catalog that people were not too thrilled about.
Complain about Tiny Furniture too? John Mulvaney's not real and people complain about Tiny Furniture.
Yeah, Lena Dunham is not too popular among Criterion fans. I don't know why, but I haven't seen Tiny Furniture. So
I have heard Lena Dunham runs the John Mulvaney email account, though.
Yes. She is John Mulvaney.
She is, actually, switched at birth. All right, well, the next thing, there was a post on Blu-ray.com about The Great Escape, and I'll have to give some context here because it's from Mr. Lime is a poster. He works for Kino Lorber, and he posts on the Blu-ray.com forums, and he's pretty open. There's just one thread for Kino, and people will ask, hey, is this coming out? Is that coming out? And he'll give a pretty honest answer. But what he'll often do is if there's a movie that it's not coming out, he'll say, "Oh, it's with another label, or we didn't win the rights to that one, or we were outbid, or something like that." So a lot of times you can glean possible titles coming out from his responses. So the latest one is kind of exciting. Actually, I have not seen this film, and it's a pretty big blind spot for me. But The Great Escape was asked about, and he said it's with another label. I think it was maybe Criterion Forum or maybe the people at Blu-ray, I forget. They kind of speculated that might mean The Great Escape is coming out on Criterion. And I think it's a Warner's title. Am I right? I don't know. So
I have it on my shelf. I've actually not seen it either, but I could check if you gave me like 10 minutes to actually find it.
Sure. We'll just pause.
We'll just pause
the podcast. Go ahead. Yeah. Matt, have you seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's such an obscure film. Where have you ever seen The Great Escape before?
Here's the deal. I don't want to build up The Great Escape too much for you guys because you are grown men. But if you had seen The Great Escape when you were 12, it would be one of your favorite movies.
Wow. So I missed that window.
You did miss the window. I actually haven't seen it in quite a long time. But I probably watched it about 15 or 20 times when I was a kid. It's one of those movies where it's just, there's about 1,000 people in it. It's super long, but it's so much fun. It's so engaging. Steve McQueen is the man in that movie. It's just super entertaining, great film. There's nothing I can say about it that's bad.
All right, Dave, I don't know if you're up or not, but I have this thing called the internet.
Okay.
So that saved you from having to get a little exercise. So
is the internet a book of files that you comb through?
Yes, very, very quickly.
With punch cards?
Yes. So it's with MGM. That's okay. Who did the last release, which was actually in 2013.
I bought that because it looked like it had a fancy minimalist cover. I open the shrink wrap, and it's just a piece of cardboard they stuck in there with it, and I was so disappointed.
And you know what? It's only $5 on Amazon. That says something, too.
I got ripped off at Best Buy.
That happens all the time, though, where you buy something for 20 bucks and later it's $5. So
I think I bought it for $7.
It's $5.99 on Amazon. So actually, I just as I was pulling it up, I one-click ordered. So I can invest $5 for a rental and rebuy it if it comes out on Criterion. So even though I'm not 12.
You just ensured that it's going to get a Criterion release.
Took one for the team, guys.
Thank you.
You're welks. So, okay, well, yeah, maybe not high art, but the 12-year-old me might love it or hate it. And sometimes I forget movies I've seen, and I was thinking I had seen this one, but no, I was confusing it for the one with Cassavetes, The Dirty Dozen.
Yeah.
Also a good movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also good if you're 12, probably.
Yes.
Yes, very much so.
Okay, moving along. There was another post on the Blu-ray.com forums, and if you can hear my clickage, that's because I'm on the internet, and it shows up on my phone. The bunch of cards you were just talking about.
Yeah.
John Waters, this was another post on Blu-ray.com from MovieMan66. Great name. He has a avatar with a dog with what looks like a laser coming out of his mouth or something.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty original.
Thank you, internet.
Yes, the internet's a really cool place. John
I
Waters
check it out someday.
At his live show last night at Horror Hound Weekend, said there, quote, there is more Criterion on the way. And then parentheses, that is the way I understood it as. So I don't know if that means that it was a direct quote or he was making a little mental leap there to get there.
It doesn't surprise me. Multiple Maniacs, granted I have not seen it, seems kind of like one of those gateway movies for directors where they release one of their older ones that maybe hasn't been as widely seen in hopes that they get something.
Test the waters, yeah.
Test the waters, see if people like it, and I guess.
That's how test the waters.
I was going to say.
That was not intentional. That was a really bad pun, among my worst, but I can rest easy knowing I did not deliberately do that. So I haven't really researched which studios have what films. I would think that Pink Flamingos would be ripe. I think maybe Hairspray. I don't think Serial Mom would be a good one, but I don't know. What do you think, Matt? Are you a John Waters fan?
Yeah, I'm a huge John Waters fan. Pink Flamingos was a Laserdisc, so I do expect to see that coming. Multiple Maniacs was virtually unseen until a few years ago, so I think that was a situation where they wanted to tour the movie in theaters, and so now they're putting it out on DVD and Blu-ray for people. So I'm not surprised they led with the movie that most people haven't even heard of, let alone seen. Mm-hmm. I do expect to see a lot more, probably mostly 80s, 70s and 80s stuff.
Sure.
I don't expect to see, what was the Ed,
a Dirty Shame
one.
Is that Pecker? Was
Pecker.
That? Yeah.
I don't expect to see Pecker.
Trasho Mondo, maybe?
Yeah. Mondo Trasho. I read that because there's a Waters commentary on Multiple Maniacs, and apparently in the commentary he says that Mondo Trasho will never be released on home video. So much for that. Yeah, I think it's because they use a lot of high-profile music in it, and so they're not going to be able to clear the music, and they probably wouldn't be able to refinish the movie what's available to them.
Sometimes that has a way of working itself out, because that was the problem with Erg: A Music War, because that had, you know, the Police and X and the Cramps, not that the Cramps would be difficult to get the rights to. But they were able to put that on disc. But I think it took a while for that same reason. So maybe I don't know how old that commentary is on Maniacs. It might be brand new, and I just...
It is. Yeah, it's brand new. I think... well,
so never
mind.
There's
definitely Rolling Stones in Mondo Trasho.
Ah, so, yeah. That's a high
but
place.
But I think there's more... I think there's more pretty high-profile stuff in it as well, so...
Sorry, I'm Googling Mondo Trasho soundtrack. Frank Sinatra. Yeah, Judy Garland. Bill Haley. Little
there
Richard. Mae West, the Shangri-Las, yeah, a lot of Chuck Berry, yeah, Merle Haggard, yeah, this is going to be tough. Although Jim Nabors, I think that's gettable.
That's all you need.
As long as they don't see the movie.
just put Jim Nabors songs for the entire thing. I haven't seen Mondo Trasho, so I don't know. But I actually haven't watched Multiple Maniacs yet either because I'm waiting for Mark, but eventually I will.
It's a lot of fun.
I that's what I hear. So anyway, the last thing is this movie called Pow Wow Highway. And we got this, somebody posted this thinking we were Criterion, in Criterion Considered, this little group which has a lot of activity, some good conversation, some not so much, and a lot of Pink Floyd talk. So somebody said, I think they thought they were talking, well, Matt, why don't you explain it since you moderate that place?
Yeah, it was somebody who just joined. They thought that they were talking to Criterion and said, I hear you're releasing Pow Wow Highway on DVD, and great choice. And I said, hello, I'm not Criterion, but thank you anyway.
You should have signed it John Mulvaney.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it was John Mulvaney posting it as kind of like a secret hint.
You know, I should change my name on Facebook to John Mulvaney. That would be
that would be funny.
Oh boy, I can just imagine all the fake accounts that are going to pop up. They might already be out there.
No, so I asked her where she had heard that, and apparently, I don't know if it was on a forum or on Facebook, but the author, the movie is based on a book, and the author recently died, David Seals, and the. In a thread about the fact that he had died, the director. Came on of the film, who is Jonathan Wax, and said that Criterion would be releasing the movie soon. It's been released on DVD, but all the DVDs of it are out of print and fetching pretty high prices on Amazon at the moment. I mean, not like hundreds of dollars or anything, but
sure.
$40 or $50. So it seems like a possibility. I've never seen the film. I had heard of it vaguely before.
Same.
It's supposed to be really great, though. So
I think there's a Native American
it
story.
Is, yes.
Yeah. So and my wife's half.
It's a road trip film.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah, so Vendors meets I don't know. I'm trying to think of I guess Dances with Wolves, maybe. Yeah, so I'm curious. I noticed that just looking on IMDb or Letterboxd, there weren't a lot of likes or activities. So if this does come out, and who knows, this could be like a Filmstruck thing. It might not be a mainline release. So, but it might be a good discovery. I love when they do that. All right. Oh, by the way, I pulled up John Mulvaney on Facebook, and there is a page for him, and I have some mutual friends, and it says lives in New York, New York. So that means he's alive, Dave.
See, I was right the whole time.
You were. Yeah, Facebook proved it.
And the internet
is there a
can't
Santa
be wrong.
Claus
never wrong.
In the North Pole?
Yeah, I think there's a profile for Santa Claus, too. So
living in the North Pole. That just confirms that.
We're going to call Snopes right now and let them know what's what.
I think Santa's Facebook account got disabled for flaming.
All right, well, let's get to our short takes. So we'll have to be a little quick here because we spent a lot of time with Samurai Wars and bullshitting about John Waters and John Mulvaney and other Johns. So, Dave, what's your short take?
So for my short take, I'm going to choose something that does not have a physical release yet in hopes that my talking about it will give it one. It's a Filmstruck release from a filmmaker that I know you guys know that I love, Ingmar Bergman. Hour of the Wolf, which
totally
I was ecstatic to see was put on Filmstruck last week. This is one of my favorite Ingmar Bergman films. I don't think it gets enough praise, doesn't get enough time to shine. It's his only true horror film, even though he kind of dips his toes into the waters with Persona and Cries and Whispers. And I think that this is a fantastic film, a fantastic use of the Island of Pharaoh, just a fantastic idea of putting all of Ingmar Bergman's fears of kind of like the price of fame almost, and just being ripped apart by your fears, your insecurities, and your past. And I can't recommend enough that everyone checks this out, and hopefully it too becomes one of your top five Ingmar Bergman films of all time.
That's a big, that's high praise.
Well, I'll just say I haven't seen Hour of the Wolf. This is one of those movies that I have been waiting for a good transfer of.
I had seen it on the MGM disc, which really wasn't that bad, but seeing it in HD was nice.
I saw the MGM too, and I thought it was kind of bad. I was lukewarm on it, but intrigued. I think sometimes my patience wears thin on those bad transfers, so yeah. I think that affects my opinion.
Perhaps I was just like being soft on it because it was Bergman, but the film struck one is great, so you guys should both check that out.
It's very close to the top of my queue for sure.
Excellent.
I think I'm going to hold out hoping that the release comes out. I'm feeling pretty confident about this. I don't know anything, but I feel good about it. All right, Matt, what's your short take?
My short take is three films, but it's a set. It's the Proletariat Trilogy by the aforementioned Aki Kaurismäki. I'm working my way through the Eclipse set and the Eclipse series, and this is a nice little box of movies that are all about 70 minutes long, mm-hmm. and they are a complete pleasure to watch. They are funny in the driest possible sense, and I think they're very slow, but in a way that is extremely engaging.
Yeah.
And, I just fell in love with them. I loved all three of them, but I think of the three, Ariel, the middle one is my favorite. The first one, Shadows in Paradise, is kind of a romantic comedy. Match Factory Girl is kind of a thriller. And by the way, these are extremely loose definitions of the of the genre. Ariel is his kind of crime noir movie, but it's not at all. It's very dark. Lots of tragic things happen, but it's hilarious, and it's almost as light as a Lubitsch movie in its tone and the way that it introduces the characters, the way that it shows plot developments with simple shots that one shot for an entire scene just to explain the entire thing happening. And just Kaurismäki's deadpan, dry presentation, it just fits so perfectly with the movie that I fell in love with it.
Yeah, I just checked Letterboxd, and I've seen seven of his movies, and three of them are this trilogy, and I gave them all 4 stars because I was trying to remember which one I liked the most. And I'm thinking, actually, which is the one with the garbage man? Was that Shadows in Paradise?
Yeah, that's Shadows in Paradise.
I think I like that one the most.
That's the romantic comedy.
Yeah, although I do remember Ariel. I like that as well. I like that actor, the mustache guy, the guy that was on the Jarmusch movie, Night on Earth. He's very quirky, very quiet, very fits very well with Kaurismäki's style. Yes. So yeah, I'm with you. I love this trilogy. So, well, my short take. I'm sorry. Are you done, Matt?
Yep, I'm done.
Okay. My short take is really, really short. Mine. I actually wasn't going to do one because I just had been watching so many other things. I didn't get a chance to watch another Criterion. But then last night I put in Walkabout, and so I was watching it on the somewhat newish TV, the 4K TV, and man, it just looked stellar. It's great to see these. You know, that's a 40-year-old movie. To see the colors really bounce from such an old film, but the thing is, around 50 minutes, it started freezing, and then I went through the chapter stops, and I tried to back it up, rewind, fast forward. I could not get past minute 50, no matter what I did. So I thought, okay, was this on the list of the bronzing discs? And I did some research, and I don't know if it was or was not, but there was a known issue about it. And this was a 2010 or 2011 release, I think 2010. And so that this was one that you had to email John Mulvaney, in case you guys didn't know, he's a real person. And he'll send out, he'll personally send out a replacement because that's
he'll deliver it by hand.
He'll bicycle to your house and give you this this disc. Now, actually, they do have a track record of making things right when this happens, and I haven't heard many people angry with them and how they've handled this. So, I emailed Mr. John Mulvaney, living, breathing person there, and I expect to get a response. You know, probably sometime this week. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time to hear back from them. Depends on their. You know, the John Mulvaney's bicycling time. He might be bicycling to Alaska. But when he gets back, he'll probably respond and send me a new one. But I was really blown away by what was a big blind spot for me. And I'm really thinking that I like the Australian New Wave a lot. I need to see more of those, more of the obscure films from that era. So are you guys fans of Walkabout?
I haven't seen it, but I need to check it out. And hopefully I don't have a bronze disc.
Yeah, you might.
I like Walkabout a lot.
You might want to fast forward a minute 50 and see if it works.
So. Well, I still need to actually pick it up. Hopefully, I'll see if I can get a second printing just in case.
There you go.
Yeah, that's too bad. That's a bummer.
Yeah, that sucks.
That's the first time it's happened to me, actually. And having bought all these over the last few years, you know, I'm kind of surprised because this comes up. But no, I've only
ever had it happen with The Lady Vanishes. Played fine the first time, and then years later had an issue, but they made it right very quickly.
Yeah, they're good about that. And,
yeah, they really are.
And it really isn't frequent, but, you know, there's going to be disc rot. CDs are, you know, are CDs. DVDs are not infinite. They are finite materials. So, all right, well, that's Filmstruck. That's Short Takes. Filmstruck's coming up. And guess what we have? Drum roll.
Speed round?
That's probably a really annoying drum roll because my mic. Speed round. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready. What joyous music we get to listen to. I wonder who provided that.
I wonder. Some asshole.
Yeah.
No, some beautiful person.
My.
Yeah, beautiful in his heart, not in his face.
Oh,
All right, we're
brought me up just to take me right back down.
Speed rounding the main channel. We're going to talk about Italian neorealism, and since we're running long, 5 seconds each, and that includes me. So Italian realism. I'm going to go movie by movie. Shoeshine, Dave.
No, I haven't seen it.
Matt.
Can't wait to watch it.
Aaron, it's amazing. All right, La Terra Trema, Matt.
Haven't seen it. Can't wait to watch it. Super
Dave.
Long.
Haven't seen it. I guess I'll watch it.
Okay, me. It's kind of subversive, politically. It's good. Dave, Bicycle Thieves.
Great movie.
Okay, if you said you hadn't seen it, I'd be throwing you off the show. not really. Matt.
Love it. Great.
Yeah, what an ending. All right, Rome Open City. Dave.
I have not seen any of that trilogy, actually.
All right, I just skip you from here on out. Matt.
One of the most important movies ever made.
Should watch it.
Excuse my cough. Like I said, I was sick. I'm with that. Umberto D. Dave, since you struck out.
Depressing.
Oh, it has a dog. Matt.
Yeah, that doesn't make it better.
One of the most depressing movies ever made.
But cute dog. Yeah, no, it is a bit of a downer. All right, Germany, Year Zero. Don't even bother, Dave. Matt.
Great. Really good.
Yeah, well, quite an ending. Again.
Very sad.
Spoiler.
Well, it's sad. I mean, it's Italian. German. It's going to be sad.
Italian neorealism. They're pretty much all sad.
We're like neorealism.
Right. Skipping Dave again because Paizan, Matt.
Great. Some, you know, like any anthology, some are better than others, but still really great.
Yeah, I like the first and second one. It's been a little bit, but I think the third one was not as good. But still good. The least of that trilogy, I'd say. Bitter Rice, Dave.
I keep meaning to buy that.
All right. Great. You're doing tremendously, man.
I'm really, yeah.
Matt.
I love the cinematography in that movie. I actually haven't watched it on Blu-ray. I probably should.
All right. Armpit Hair. Stromboli, Dave.
Not my favorite, but it's the name. It's a Philadelphia dish created because of the name of that movie, the food.
Huh. All right, you redeemed yourself there.
Did not know that.
Matt, Stromboli.
It's good. It's the ending is interesting.
Well, I'm going to surprise you guys. It's my favorite Rossellini. I really taken with this film. All right. I, comma, Vitelloni, Matt. No, there's no comma. That's an inside joke.
Vitelloni. I love this movie. It's one of my favorite Fellinis.
All right, Dave.
It's on my watch list.
Mine too. It's a big. I think it's the only one on this list I haven't seen, so that I have that going for me. But I need to see it. All right, the children are watching us, Dave.
What?
They're not watching you.
No, I'm not watching them either.
It's okay. It's very melodramatic.
It is. It's a little scathing. Early neorealism. So, Journey to Italy. We already talked about it. So I'll go back to you, Matt.
That's actually probably my favorite Rossellini movie.
Okay. Dave?
I remember really liking it, but I can't remember a thing about it other than the Pompeii thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's what everybody remembers. Yeah. I'll just say watch the English version, because the actors are speaking English. The Italian doesn't work for me, but it is good. Oh, there's one more. Knights of Cabiria, Dave.
I just watched it this morning. It was great.
Oh, you studied.
I did.
Matt.
See? I came prepared.
This is my favorite Fellini movie. We need a Blu-ray release of this movie somewhere in the world. Please, yeah, Blu-ray.
We do. It's been a while for me, but this is one of my first Fellinis. I remember The Religion was very well done, but I want to rewatch it. I'm going to wait. I'm sure it'll come someday. All right, well, that's neorealism. But guess what? Speed round is not over. Uh-huh. We have Cinema Passport. Japan was also recently added. So, we already talked about Rashomon, but go ahead, because I'm sure there's some more bad jokes in this. Matt, Rashomon.
Well, I liked it the first time we mentioned it, but this time I don't like it so much.
Dave.
I want to refer to my ghost for this one, but my ghost really likes it.
Yeah, I'm not even going to bother. Tokyo Story. I'm not even going to ask you, Matt. Dave.
I'm not going to visit it again because I'll die before I get to see it again, like their parents.
Okay. Did you just spoil it?
No, that's just a line from the
half.
Okay. You spoiled half. All right, Nat. Is this the greatest film of all time, or
no? That's Late Spring.
Okay. All right. Well, you could change. You could have some new rating scale, and
I will say, don't watch if you have never seen an Ozu movie. Don't watch Tokyo Story first.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Ugetsu, Dave.
We already talked about this one too. It's great.
Well, it's on Filmstruck, so there you go, Matt.
You Filmstruck.
I need to rewatch this movie. Is it the restored version? Is the question.
I didn't check. It just came out today, so I guess somebody will let us know, or maybe we'll look and let ourselves know. The Ballad of Narayama. This is the 1958 version, Matt.
It's a good movie. It's way out of place with these other towering masterpieces on this list.
Dave?
I'm a big fan. I really like the super theatrical nature of it, how it's kind of like moving sets constantly, and I think it has a great ending.
I love the sets in this movie. I think it great use of color. I agree, it's not the best. And going to the last one, The Human Condition, I'll just say I haven't seen it. It's just too long. I haven't gotten to it yet. It's a big time commitment. Dave, have you seen it?
I'm right there with you. It's something that I keep wanting to watch, but I'm just waiting for when I have, 12 spare hours?
I know. Matt, I'm sure you've seen it.
It's remarkable. It's a remarkable experience.
And also 12 hours.
I think it's 9.
All right.
12?
Maybe
it's 9.
Is it 3 or 4 parts?
Three. It's really 6 parts, but they listed it 2 at a time.
3 movies,
yeah, you're right,
I guess.
It should be 9. Okay.
If you go to the movie theater to see it, which not that you have the option, but you buy 3 tickets.
Yeah.
If that's how you measure things. But
I think they probably charge me for 6 tickets, actually, if it has parts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Well,
when I get all their money.
How many tickets do they charge you for Pulp Fiction? That has like 20 parts.
This is true. They should charge by the part of the movie.
And the thing is, the parts change like so frequently. They could charge you like 50 tickets.
Yeah.
So anyway, we could keep going with this. All right, Criterion Channel. We had the short plus feature. We're kind of retreading a lot of the same ground here. So it was A Dog's Life and Umberto D. So As it turns out, I had just seen A Dog's Life a few weeks ago when I was on my shorts binge, and it is one of my favorite Chaplin shorts, even though it's less about the dog. But there is a dog in it, and there's actually a fake dog in it sometimes. Matt, have you seen either of these? Or I know you've seen Umberto D, because we just talked about it.
Yeah, I have not seen A Dog's Life, actually. I'm not a big Chaplin fan.
What?
Oh.
Yeah.
Have you seen A Dog's Purpose?
That's coming to the collection, right? It's Lassie Holstrom, or however you say his name.
Of course, yeah. He's definitely a Criterion guy.
Yeah.
Criterion guy.
I know.
Yeah, with a dog
once,
movie.
Once.
Yeah.
Never again. Oh,
never again.
Say
yes. No, you should say that.
Well, I should. I feel like I should, but I can't. I'm not predicting the future. I mean, come on. Umberto D, we already talked about, is I think it's amazing. I think it's groundbreaking, mm-hmm. but it is a difficult film. It's difficult and life-affirming in a way, too. I think it's special.
I want to say whoever programmed these in this order is a mean person, because A Dog's Life is that's the Chaplin one, is so nice and uplifting and lighthearted, and then Umberto D is just going to bring you down. Mm-hmm. It's just going to crash down on you and ruin your life.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago I had talked about how I don't cry in films much. Umberto D cried in that film. I
didn't cry as much as I was just like, oh, well, everything sucks now.
You are not human, sir. You are not human. All right, well, the Friday night double feature was Touching the Void and Letter Never Sent. We talked about Touching the Void when we talked about Kevin MacDonald a few weeks back, which I misspelled on the show notes. Thank you, Twitter person, for pointing that out. But this is the one we expected to see. I think it's a brilliant movie, beautiful movie. I'm not going to watch it. It's, by the way, it's a limited engagement. I think it is removed from the service in a month or two. But have you guys seen it?
I have not.
I love the show. Have you seen this? Nope. Okay, moving on. All right, Letter Never Sent. I'll just ask myself. I have not seen it. So, I know.
Oh, it's so good.
I know.
It's so good.
Near the top of my to see before something list.
Kalatozov is one of those directors that I just need to find more movies from, but they just are not available in the U.S.
Yeah.
And Letter Never Sent might be my favorite one of his, and it's just... I can't believe he got away with... I assume he set a forest on fire. I don't know.
Yeah. I prefer Cranes Are Flying, but it's a great movie. And even though it's a, you know, very sort of dark movie, it's a really easy watch because it's so engaging.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen it. I don't know what the connection is with Touching the Void, but Touching the Void's about ice hiking, mountain climbing.
It's a survival connection.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. All right. Well,
it's icy and snowy, too.
Oh, great. Icy and Snowy is good. All right, well, that is higher on my list. I was going to say The List Before I Die, but I don't want to be... You know, we already brought you down with Umberto D, so I don't want to bring you down further.
It's a short movie, too. You can fit it into you can fit four of them into Human Condition.
Okay, great. So how many tickets is that? One ticket?
Seven.
Seven. We had an Adventures in Movie going, and I really like these. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch this, but they had an author who I did not know, Jonathan Lethem, but my wife knew him because she teaches English, and I guess he's been anthologized, and his novels have... He's kind of like a... seems like he's like a pop literate novelist. So I'll start with you, Matt. Did you get to see this?
I didn't, but I feel like these adventures in movie going are revealing just how sort of tapped into the New York art scene the Criterion Collection is.
Yeah, that's fair in this case too. But the next one will be about Lincoln Center Ballet. So, Matt or Dave, did you get to see this?
I watched a couple of the little short takes that he had on movies that I had seen, and I thought they were fun.
Okay, I did enjoy this. He talks about how, and I could relate because my dad kind of ushered me into the collection, and he talks about his mother and how she took him to art house films in the 70s in New York, and like she told him things to look out for as he's watching the film, like when he's 10, 11, 12, 13. And I think that he used an example. I think maybe it was Vertigo. I forget which example. I think it was Cassavetes' film. And I thought, man, that is the coolest mom in the world. So, yeah, interesting stories. I do like that they do this with different disciplines. and they probably could get filmmakers to do it, but I like that they're not succumbing. Although I would like more people from film involved too. So, all right, well, there's also another digital spine, and yeah, so yeah, Matt and I are on record not being a fan of Lone Wolf and Cub, and we already went over this in that little battle an hour ago. But you know, if you don't own this and you're on the fence, I think this is a great way to check it out. Just watch the first couple and see if they're up your alley. And then if you you want to buy it, then you know some people love it. Dave, you kind of gave a really really short take earlier, but
I think they're schlocky. I think it's fun schlock. I like that there's more schlock in the Criterion Collection. I don't know if they need to create a separate schlock label, kind of like Arrow does with Arrow Academy versus Arrow Video, but I appreciate schlock getting the care and attention that it needs. Otherwise, it'll die and never thrive.
Well, but, that was originally
Criterion schlock.
That was originally what Eclipse was going to be.
Schlock?
In the first idea for Eclipse was the Monsters and Mad Men box set was going to be Eclipse set. And then they decided that they wanted to do, just a broader umbrella of things.
I kind of wish that they had their own little separate label, because I just, not that I mind that things like Multiple Maniacs are on Criterion, or Lone Wolf and Cub is on Criterion, but I think it would cause less complaints if it had its own little corner.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's time for them to make a new label for movies that we hate, like Tiny Furniture and Benjamin Button and Jellyfish Eyes.
But I understand what Dave's saying. I mean, something like Horror Comes to Shōjiku is perfect. Is fine on Eclipse. If they had released that on Criterion, it would have been a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I think with Lone Wolf and Cub, yeah, I mean, I know Scott and I was considering whether he should open the set that he had or sell it to get something else because he had heard negative things about it. This is a perfect way to watch one or two of them.
Yeah. I don't think he has Filmstruck either, so this isn't helping.
He does, because he was giving me recommendations on Twitter at one point.
He's just on my last episode. I can't believe how quickly I forget stuff.
Well, I think my problem with the Lone Wolf and Cub set actually is that it wasn't fun enough. I felt like the first two movies had some of that, and then it's like the middle of the third through sixth movies just drags so much.
It was like schlock by numbers. Like, we have to have a rape, we have to have a battle scene, it's going to be boring in between. Whereas, like, the First Lady Snowblood is a lot of fun.
That's not schlock, that's good movie.
And Zatoichi. Zatoichi is schlock and good movie. Fun.
I think it transcends schlock to a degree. Okay. I can't wait for Hanzo the Razor if we're going to talk about schlock. Holy moly.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but
my God.
I want to see Shintaro Katsu be, have eyes for one.
Yeah. No, it blew my mind.
Really? In a good way, or?
In all ways.
Okay.
It took 5 minutes before I had to start rewinding scenes to watch them again to make sure I wasn't hallucinating.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if it's been speculated, but...
It's on Filmstruck now.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it was on Hulu the whole time as well.
I wasn't sure if it was going to make the transition, but it did.
Maybe it's next. Who knows? Who knows? But there are a lot of things like what's that old classic series? A Bulldog Drummond, too? Doesn't seem like... That could be like a lesser label if they ever did that. They probably would never do that to their brand.
I think at this point their brand is too cemented to create the schlock label.
All right, well, we're done, guys.
Bye.
Well, we still have a piece of flair. All right, Dave, what's your piece of flair?
Speaking of schlock, I'm going to talk about a film from Vinegar Syndrome that I was able to buy early because I went to Monster Mania Con in Jersey a couple weeks back, and they were selling a couple of their upcoming releases early. So I got to buy Witch Trap before it comes out this upcoming Tuesday. And if you're a fan of incompetently bad movies verging on brilliantly incompetent, I can't recommend this enough. It is about paranormal investigators checking out the house that belonged to a Satanist that is now being turned into a bed and breakfast. And the Satanist now haunts the place, and they're trying to get rid of him. And it has some of the best bad acting I have ever seen, because literally these people aren't even trying. It's just completely monotonous, monotone, And it's what I would like to call a Stockholm Syndrome movie, because at first you're like, what am I watching? But by the end, you're totally on par with it. And you don't know if it's because you're genuinely liking it or because you've spent so much time with it that you know nothing else anymore and you're just enjoying it. So,
are you sure it's not a Bellatar movie?
It's not, but
Bellatar is no Lars von Trier. Come on, guys.
And also, it does have one of the better cinematic head explosions of all time.
Ooh, well, there's really only one to measure it against.
It's not Scanners, but
okay.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Or head explosion. Altered States is another one.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good point.
That is a good one. Yeah. All right, Matt, what's your piece of flair?
My piece of flair is a few things that have come on streaming I just want to run down for people. Gimme Danger, the Stooges documentary.
Yes, yes, I see that.
By Jim Jarmusch. It just came on Prime. Two of the best animated movies of the last generation, Coraline and Iron Giant, are on Netflix now. If you haven't seen them, please do so. They put up a ton of Almodovar on Hulu this week. Mm-hmm. So just about everything from his middle period is on Hulu now.
Really?
And yes, and
for
then
the five people that still have Hulu on the Snor show.
Well, that's my problem because yeah, there's a few of those that I want to see, but I don't have Hulu anymore. And then the last one is my favorite Seijin Suzuki movie, Youth of the Beast, was put up on Filmstruck. So I highly recommend checking that out. It's not on Blu-ray yet, but it was a DVD release.
I still have that Masters of Cinema. I still haven't watched it.
Yes.
I know, yeah. All right, well, my piece of flair is, again, more Arrow Academy. So we have The Sorrow and the Pity, and that is younger Ophuls. Marcel, was it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Marcel. So that, I think that's his only film. This is a documentary about the Resistance, really. And I did some studying on the Resistance that I'd probably talked about on about 20 shows, but I think this is a remarkable documentary. Pretty much, if you want to learn about the Resistance, this is it. This is the way to go. So, and also the Seijin Suzuki's Taisho trilogy, which is a later trilogy. I think it was in the 80s and 90s. I think the last film was 91. And I haven't seen any of these, but they're coming out on Arrow. These are only Region B, so you have to have a region-free player. I doubt if they're... I think that Taisho Trilogy, that could be something that Criterion might get their hands on. I don't know. There was a lot of excitement for it, so if that's any indication... Actually, I think The Sorrow and the Pity could be up their alley, too. So, I don't know.
If it's any indication that... Because now that they are doing Arrow Academy in the U.S., too, the fact that they did Region B only means that someone here has the rights, I would assume. So I'd say it's a pretty good indicator.
Sometimes they do get things later. Like, they just released Cinema Paradiso.
This is true.
And
I just bought that, actually.
Oh, good job. A great movie.
But that was their launching of the Arrow Academy in the U.S.
Oh, okay. Oh,
so,
well, didn't it just come out?
Yes, but this month was the first month that they were doing stuff. So,
Right. Okay.
It's possible that it's just because they just got that, or it's possible that these things could come later, so...
Don't you dare watch that director's cut first.
I watched the theatrical cut last night.
All right, good.
So I conferred with Twitter, and they confirmed that don't go director's cut.
Don't, yes. So, all right, guys. Well, where can people find you online, Dave?
You can find me on Twitter at Cinema versus Dave. That's Cinema vs. Dave. Mm-hmm. And let me know that I won the samurai thing.
And Matt, where can people let you know if you won the samurai thing?
You can let me know if I won the samurai thing at Cinema versus Dave on Twitter.
That's good. I think you just won.
I'm on Twitter and Letterboxd as Matthew E.G. And I'm much more active on Letterboxd than I am on Twitter. I watch quite a few movies. So come find me there and say that I'm wrong about something.
Yeah, I'm wrong everywhere, but I'm on Twitter. I'm on Twitter less and less. But AOS505, I know that's a ringing endorsement. Follow me on Twitter for nothing. Sometimes I tweet stuff, but not as much lately. And also Letterboxd, I'm DSNT. And but I don't really. I just do use the diary feature and lists and stuff. So, yeah. All right, who won the samurai battle? We'll let you guys vote, and whoever lost can never come back. That's a lie.
We're going to get voted off like Survivor.
Yeah.